Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
By 2025, 50% of global population will be using some sort of a super app. So the future looks great.
Hello, I'm your host, Effie Pilarinou, and today I have the pleasure to have with us Neha Mehta, who is the founder and CEO of Femtech Partners and a consultant based in Singapore around inclusive finance, sustainability. Let me welcome you, Neha. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Effie. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you again. Thank you.
It is. We had a while to connect before COVID, and now I'm very excited because we are connecting, and there's a reason to celebrate as soon your book will be launched, and the topic is of huge interest, especially to us in the West, as it is on super apps. Tell us briefly the title of your book.
Thank you. Like you said, very excited. The book is called One Stop, and rightly so, because it's going to be a one-stop solution for all the super app lovers to really understand how the super apps came about, how the journey has been. We have done some deep diving and case studies into different apps from across the globe. And Penguin Random House is going to publish this book very soon. So this is an exciting phase because finally the story is out. I think this is the first of its kind on super apps. And like we were discussing before, the book is divided into two sections. The first section, of course, talks about my vision and perspective based on the research I've done and the interviews I did. And section two is just about interactive sessions that I had with founders, with venture capitalists, with investors, with different regulators. So it really gives a gamut of information to the reader. And this is the first attempt in putting the information out there on super apps.
You know, what's interesting, and we must admit, especially in the West, that all the spotlight has really been on China. The super app model is born out of China. We're all familiar, especially with WeChat. We are familiar with what Ant has done, Alibaba. Jack Ma is a big celebrity, if you want. But there's so many other countries that have super apps, and we know much less. So tell us, which are these other countries and their super app approaches, if you want?
Absolutely. So you're right. The journey started from WeChat as early as 2011, back then when no one had an idea of what super apps is all about, because the term was coined much, much later. And WeChat was just about messaging. And then the next year after its launch, it evolved into digital payments. And from there on, so many services were added to it. It became a one-stop solution, like I said, something similar to a Swiss Army knife. I know you're dialing in from Switzerland.
Yes.
So the concept of Swiss Army knife is just very apt. But you're right. When you talk about the Western world, super apps have not really taken off, and there's a big reason for it. If I were to get into the reason number one, I would say it's purely because of the data privacy laws, because in India, in Singapore and other countries, of course, the regulation is there, but also the regulators are not trying to stifle the innovation, meaning that the customers are willing to try new methods of doing financial transactions, booking the cab, ordering food. But at the same time, how the data is being regulated in, let's say, EU and the US is not at the same measure and scale in the Eastern countries. And therefore, starting from China, this journey has gone on to in a very big way in Southeast Asia. We were just talking about Singapore. So Singapore is home to two big super apps, Grab and GoTo. GoTo was previously called Gojek. So these names have become household names altogether because it's so much easier for an individual to log onto the app and do so many things in one go. And so is the example of India, because India is home to Paytm and PhonePe. They have really taken off during the COVID time. I remember the time when we spoke just before COVID, these apps were not so popular, but now everyone is using them and their popularity has gone many folds. So beyond the data point, I think there's also something that we have to factor in is the mobile first experience, because we're talking about these developing markets where the experience of digital, the switch from offline to online, happened through a mobile device. So it was a lot more easier for people to hop onto an app and do this for the first time versus a country like Switzerland, where people were using laptops, the computers, for such a long time. So they are more used to having a standalone specialized app for each and every service. So I think there are many other reasons as well. And yeah, I think it's going to take me a while to cover all of them, but that's where the book comes into play. But purely, the book does put a spotlight on why these apps have taken off in the East versus the West. And then when Elon Musk comes up with an announcement that X is going to be an everything app, I think the future does look fantastic, but it remains to be seen how it's going to play out with the data privacy laws in these countries.
Yeah, we'll return to your opinion about super apps in the developed world. You already mentioned India, you already mentioned Singapore. What are the other countries that we should be aware of, we Westerners, with the super apps? I'm very familiar with Kakao, right, out of Korea. And actually, I was just recently reading from Capronesia that they are looking to go international, meaning in the region to Thailand and I think also in Taiwan too. So tell us, you know, the other countries and are some of these super apps going beyond their borders?
Yeah, you're right. I think the regulation, of course, is unique in all these countries, but innovation is borderless. And we have seen that during COVID, that these apps are thriving. And especially when we talk about Southeast Asia, which is becoming like a big super app market, we're looking at Grab, GoTo. Then we, like you mentioned, there is Kakao. And in China, we have Alipay, WeChat. In India, we have got Grab. In India, we have Paytm, PhonePe. In the UAE, we have Careem. So there are so many of these examples. Of course, in Africa as well, there's Gozem. So a lot of these names are coming up. But what really is going to be the defining factor is what is the pull factor for people to go into these apps and come back and visit it again? Because if you look at the journey, most of them started off like a ride hailing in case of Grab, or like a messaging app, or just about a payments feature. But they had such a sticky factor to one feature that people were coming back for that. And then they got a plethora of other services as well to play with. So I think the apps that are trying to make this journey seamless, frictionless, and more efficient, because you don't really have to put your passwords in all these apps. You don't have to download so many apps. So to be able to bring that journey is what really matters. And when you ask me specifically about the countries, I would say it's usually China, India, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, Cambodia as well now, and then of course Japan and India. These are the big players. But when we talk about tech giants like Amazon, Meta, Google, they also have plans. As recent as just a few days back in India, Google made an announcement to do a super apps for citizen services. They're trying to democratize the information sharing for citizens so that people can know about subsidies and other factors. So the ambition is there, but I think the holy grail is about execution.
Yeah, and lifestyle kind of engagement, I would say. When I think of the super app model in China, I always connect it with the mini programs, that is the secret sauce. And when I speak with people outside fintech that are in innovation, I find that they often confuse platform business models with super app models. And they're not aware of the secret sauce that exists with WeChat and has to do with these lightweight programs and the way they have integrated different businesses. So as you said, you know, if I want to shop, I don't know, you know, in a, let's say electrical appliances, I need to go to a commerce site with that provider, but I don't need to go to their app and outside. It won't lead me to their website outside the super app. This mini programs, the secret sauce, does it exist in the other super apps? You know, in Indonesia, in India, in wherever, or not really?
You're right, Afi. So when we look at the model, and of course, the journey started from WeChat. So WeChat has become like a role model of the best practice. Of course, every player in the market is trying to customize the solutions, especially when we talk about Grab getting into Singapore, Thailand, Indonesia, a different stroke for different folks. What really works for a Singapore audience may not work for a Thai audience. But the bottom line is that when we look at these apps, we're looking at some common factors. So it's safe to say we're looking at communication, commerce, financial transactions, entertainment, personal, social media aspect. So these are the main features that a super app is able to embed in its ecosystem, right? And once the app is able to provide all these services under the sun, the idea is that these mini apps, like you said, it's a platform of all these mini apps. You can go from one feature to the other with the same login, same password. And if, let's say, you're buying a coffee or buying an airplane ticket, the payment can also happen within the system. The shopping around, comparing the prices also happen within the system. You're not leaving the app to do any other research. You're right there, you do your research, you make up your mind, you make the payment, and it's stored in your app, and then it also goes into your calendar. So that whole journey from deciding to decision-making to ultimately buying happens by virtue of all these mini apps. And that is the attractive feature, because I was talking about the stickiness. So what is it that you're offering to your customer? Are you able to give them this seamless journey, or is it going to be multiple logins, forgetting passwords, OTP coming, and you know, then you just lose the momentum. So that's how these apps have evolved in many countries. And now, especially when we are talking about democratizing finance and making it more readily available for the citizens, all kind of information, I think we are at a stage where we want what we want immediately. And whoever is going to provide us with that is going to be the king for the customer. And something we should always keep in mind when we talk about super apps is the data collection, because this is what all the tech giants are going after. They really want to know what's your buying pattern, where are you spending your money, what kind of daily lifestyle, like you said, you have. And based on that, they're able to give you personalized offer, because they think they can read your mind and they are preemptive. So they can give you solutions. So I think that an app that's able to use the data wisely, of course, with artificial intelligence and machine learning, can make that decision for you, makes it easier for you to move from step A to Z, is going to be winning more customers in heart.
And now you mentioned, you know, the role of regulation or lack of regulation in these regions. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it's evolved over time? I guess in some regions, regulation has changed, and what the impact has been on the success of these models, and how do we look at the success at the end of the day?
I think when we talk about the regulation, it's usually about the data privacy in this space, because it was just as recent as I think 2022 when 2020, in fact, when Tokopedia, one of the giant from Indonesian market, actually had their data breached of their so many customers. So we know that what happens when these players are acting as a single body, a single window, by hoarding so much of data. So it is very concerning for the users as well, and also for the regulators as to what they're doing with the data. So having that stringent measures is what every country is looking at. They have already onboarded on this journey, or maybe they're getting there. And we know that in EU, we have all those data protection laws. We also have them in Singapore, India, and all these countries. So that's something which all these companies will have to adhere with. How much data are you taking? Did you take the consent or not? Where the data is going, and how is it being used? So all those questions and the measures, the check and balances need to be there. But beyond that is also the possibility of, I would say, financial inclusion, right? So if we are giving them a lot of regulation, we are stifling the innovation, like I said, and the possibility of reaching the last mile, because when we talk about sustainable development goals, I think technology is a big enabler. And studies go to show that in China, a lot of these people have benefited from these apps, because they are able to bring the unbanked into the banking system without traditional banks, but through these apps. So if we are going to regulate them overly, then it's going to get very difficult for them to find ways and means to get to that customer, which is not really a big customer in, for the traditional banks. So I think regulation is a game that regulators play really well. And especially in this book, we have managed to speak to the central bank governor, Sari Chia, and she has shared her views as to what she thinks the regulators need to do. And if I remember correctly, her view was that there's just enough regulation in the market right now. We don't need to do anything more, because we need to let these apps go out in the market, innovate, and really give better services so that the regulators are not stopping them in any way.
Interesting. And in terms of the success and the impact of these business models, I mean, you already mentioned the financial inclusion, and that's clearly there. If we look in the different regions, how do you look at, how do you measure, if you want, the success of these? And can you give us some sort of, not comparison, but like where there's been more success or more growth, or more that where there's more potential right now when we look at super apps across the different countries that you mentioned?
Yes, some of the founders I spoke to, and this is very interesting, for them, there were different driving factors. Some of them spoke about how passionate and contenting it was for them to see that their app is being used in the remote village, and someone who had never done anything related to the mobile device is able to use a QR code, accept the payments, and get it in the digital wallet. So I think for some of the founders, and this is a reference to PhonePe, which is a big super app in India, for Sameer Nigam, this was one of his biggest achievements, to be able to see a person in a village to be able to use an app like this. And then there's the other contrast to it, which is not so much related to financial inclusion, but it's about enabling SMEs and micro enterprises, because for them, you're giving them a platform to outreach to such a big audience. Suddenly, once you're part of that mini app, your audience and your market becomes wider, which you cannot have afforded even with the biggest marketing budget, because these apps have this number of people logging in every day. So I think we are talking about getting into a wider market and the markets that are open to these businesses, which were never the case before. So that's the beauty of super apps. But beyond that, I think when we look at the bottom line, whether these apps are really, these companies are really making money, Not so much. I think it's still a long game, and the investors, the public, everyone is waiting patiently because they really believe in the business and the model and the innovation they are set out to do. So the numbers are still not speaking that reality. But when I spoke to the investors and people who are closely watching this market, they also had a similar view that we need to give them some time. But one thing's for sure, that super apps are here to stay, because according to a report from Gartner, looks like by 2025, 50% of global population would be using some sort of a super app. So the future looks great.
Yeah, but that is because Asia is a growing population, right? There's a demographic, given there. And I would include also Africa. I don't know what is your opinion there about super apps in Africa. I understand that M-Pesa, for example, has essentially become a super app, although it did not start like that. And are there others in Africa that are on your radar?
Of course, M-Pesa is a great example. I was living in Fiji until recently, and M-Pesa is getting on to become a super app, like you said. And stickiness, like we spoke about earlier, right? To be able to bring people onto the platform, they've done it really well. In Africa, we also spoke to Gozim, and it's a unique model because they started off.
Where is Gozim? Which country?
I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and check. But of course, they are expanding because they started as a ride hailing, and now they're getting into payments, food delivery, something similar to a Grab model. And the founder was based in Singapore originally, I think from Switzerland. So it's a very interesting model, because then you get to know that even though the markets are different, but if you have one pull factor, then you can definitely expand into different slew of services and attract more customers.
So I have to ask you, Neha, what your opinion and stance is on the topic, whether there's going to be a super app in the US. I mean, there's articles written and opinions voiced, and of course now with X Twitter, but not only, you know, Revolut from Europe is what I call a wannabe super app, maybe PayPal too. But, you know, these we're looking at basically social media, you know, like Twitter, which has happened in the West. What is your opinion? Do you think there is any possibility, given not only the regulations around data privacy that are much more stringent, and I would say the culture of the population is much more sensitive, because it's not only the regulations, it's, you know, if you talk to Europeans, if you talk to Americans, there's more sensitivity of the people. Of course, there's double standards, because we do use all these big tech, the Googles, the Apples, the Amazons, and so on. So you could say that we're not really, maybe we have two standards, but because of that, and also because the markets are mature, right? What do you think? Do you think there's a possibility for a super app model?
So like I said, you know, of course, the ambition is there. You have named all the potential players I could think of, from Revolut to X to Meta, Google, Amazon. But I think the Archley's heel is about execution. And if they fail to do that, that's going to be a big problem. So when we look at, when I was doing this research, I was looking at the four horsemen in terms of what could really be going against these tech giants. And I think the good example here could be Meta, because if you have a clunky user interface, then people are going to give up on you, because there are 1,000 better options waiting in queue. So that's number one. And second is, if there's a specialized app that's doing a job really well, there's no reason for a customer to switch to you when they have, of course, other factors going on, unless you're giving them some loyalty points, some discounts, some competitive edges there. Then it makes sense. Otherwise, it's going to be utterly difficult for a customer sitting in the Western market to make that switch. And then comes the data privacy that we have spoken at length. And then the last, which is very valid, is the consumer behavior. So we know this is how the consumer behaves from the data privacy angle, from sticking to a specialized app angle, and how long it's going to take to change that behavior is what we are looking at. And that is a journey in itself. Some of the markets are mature enough and they're getting there. But having said that, I spoke about Google having that ambition in India with the democratization of information services for citizens. Meta has tried that in the past, and now X saying they want to be an everything app and they can copy the WeChat model. I think it looks futuristic and promising, but the holy grail is about whether they have the right tools and whether the customer is ready or not. And I think for now, maybe we are still looking at least 15 years from now before this can happen. Having said that, what I'm getting to see is that we have specialized super apps for healthcare where everything is just under one platform. You can book your doctor appointment, you have all your health records. And like you said, Revolut, we have covered that in the book as well. It's about a financial super app. So we're not looking at super app for all reasons and seasons.
All lifestyle.
We're looking for just one vertical and just nailing it really well. So getting into that vertical and doing a great job of it and being a super app, clap on, you can do it. But can you do it like the way it has happened in the Eastern market? I think it's going to be tricky because it was a first mover advantage and this was just the starting days of the internet. And I feel super apps is also the revolution, just like the web market. So you never know, but I think it's going to be a slow game.
Interesting. And what about India that you mentioned, Google's new initiative with the government services? When you say they have an ambition to be a super app in India, do you mean in this vertical sense of all the government services, or is their ambition to really become a super app like the style born in Asia? What is their vision and your take of what's possible?
Yeah, so I think this is a very recent development. Just 4 days ago, they made this announcement and it looks like they're just focusing on providing citizen services. And the app is called Google A App. And they are using artificial intelligence to collate all this information. And once you log in, they have your details. They know what city you live in, what's your age, and what's really is beneficial for you, given your demographics, like you said, and which city you're coming from. So collating all that information and giving you everything under the sun. So I think that that's beautiful because there is a market gap. I'm right now dialing in from India and it's very difficult for you to get hold of all these moving pieces. So being a super app in one vertical and really nailing it is also a great idea.
Especially in large populations like India and where the impact is huge, because I assume, you know, with all the multiple languages and helping people even that can't read with voice, with translations is just an amazing
Right. So Google is aspiring to roll out this app in 13 languages. And India has got so many languages. So you're right. Literacy level is not so good. So it really helps for people to have something in their local language they can understand. If they cannot read, at least they can hear.
Yeah. I was familiar with Microsoft doing a pilot with the Ministry of Technology in India last year. Actually, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Satya Nadella spoke about a pilot they did with ChatGPT, where people in rural India could, with voice in their local language, ask for a specific government service, and they would get an answer through the ChatGPT interface. So there's a lot there to be done in terms of, helping the digital divide, essentially getting more people in the digital world to be able to access digital services at scale and at a reasonable cost, I guess. So this is in alignment.
Of course, this is a game changer. I think this is an exciting market. Now the biggest population in the world. So we need to innovate to make sure we touch all these unbanked people.
100%. So Neha, I want to thank you and congratulate you for your upcoming book. We'll add all the details in the description of the YouTube video. And before I leave you, a more personal answer, a question rather, asking you, what are you excited about outside of fintech? What are you reading these days? What inspires you, maybe, whether it's in the written world or the visual world?
I love this question, and I'm glad you asked me this because I'm reading a book called Shoe Dog. Everyone who is into any kind of sports or likes to run or walk has read this book. It's by the Nike founder. And one of the things that really stands out for me in the book is persistence. So when I spoke to these founders, of course, the journey is about being persistent. Of course, you're innovating, you are being in the game. And I realized that, you know, I never wanted to be an author. I was working with a friend on doing this book and he walked out. And I thought, it's not me to give up. So I'm going to continue. And so this is the result of being persistent in life. And anything that goes back to success, where it started with a small idea and shaping your own thoughts and dreams, I think that really touches my heart. And that's how I am as a person. That's my DNA. So that's
the partners, you know, and your resilience and persistence. I'd call it more resilience and really going through with your dream, with what you set to do, and share with the world what is happening in a part of the world that we hear a lot, but you know, getting it from people living there is really important. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you, Effie. It was great. And I hope people get to read One Stop and they enjoy the journey of the super apps.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.